Good morning. It's a couple of minutes after 10 o'clock. We are ready to start. My name is Kelly Sparks. I am the chair of the Post Council. Would like to welcome all of you out to the council meeting this morning. Appreciate you coming. I have a couple of members who have asked to be excused today. Troy Walker has asked to be excused, and Darren Adams has asked to be excused. We also received a notice from Spencer Austin that he will not be joining us today. He's actually anticipating leaving the Attorney General's office at the beginning of January, but he has the AG's representative is Aaron Jones. Welcome, Aaron, today, and maybe just want to take a moment to thank Austin publicly for his years of service to the council and for all that he added to this body, and wish him well in his future. First item on the agenda is approval of the September 4th, 2024 minutes. If anyone has had an opportunity to review those minutes, would like to make a motion for approval.
I move that we approve the minutes from September 4th, 2024 as contained in the packet.
Thank you, Melena Stevens. Do we have a second? Jared Garcia has a second. All in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Very good. And we'd like to move into the quarterly reports from Captain Newland and Lieutenant Buck.
Morning, Council. I'm stepping in for Lieutenant Moore, who couldn't be here today. So, quarterly report for post investigations from September 1st, 2024 to November 30th, 2024, consists of the following. Post investigations received 64 complaints, opened 33 investigations, conducted 4 administrative hearings, closed 10 cases with no action following investigation. We received 7 voluntary relinquishments. The reasons for the VRs were as follows. One for distribution of pornographic material, one for DUI, resisting arrest, possession of firearm by an intoxicated person, one for custodial sexual relations, one for stalking, impersonating a peace officer, unlawful detention and sexual battery, one for rape and lying under Garrity, one for DUI, carrying a dangerous weapon while intoxicated and stalking, and one for a peace officer restraint prohibition. For applicant backgrounds, for basic training, we reviewed 290 basic training applications, 29 dispatcher applications, and 44 waiver and reactivation applications. Current caseload for this quarter is 121 open investigations, 97 active investigations. Any questions? Thank you.
Good morning. For the post-basic training statistical numbers, from September 1, 2024 to November 30th, 2024, we graduated 71 certified LEOs. We have 39 that will be graduating here on December 19th, 30 certified SFOs, and 27 dispatchers. We currently have 2 sessions going on right now, 382 and 383, 382 graduating on December 19th. We will have sessions 384 beginning January 6th, session 385 beginning February 18th, and session 386 beginning March 31st. Right now, but all those sessions have 39 and 26 enrolled as of this moment. We also conducted 36 in-service training classes. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Buck. Just like to point out, I was on a roll for like 2 minutes without making a mistake, but I did fail to recognize Mark Ziziger, who is here for Colonel Rappage today, and excuse Colonel Rappage. Thanks for being here. And for quarter three curriculum update, we'll turn the time over to John Jacobs.
Thank you, Council. We'll get this up here. Okay, so for our update, we're going to give you a very fast presentation on the work we've been doing with the classroom facilitator instructor development. So where we were before, prior to this program, we had no standardized curriculum. So whatever instructor was teaching, they were to develop their own curriculum. So we didn't have a standardized curriculum. It wasn't integrated with our post-basic training philosophy. There was no renewal process. There was exceptions for education or specialization that meant you didn't have to take any type of instructor course. The policy didn't cover professionalism, safety protocols. The attorneys had no training requirement, and there was no pathway for train the trainer, which meant that whoever brought on to teach, it was up to them to become an expert or an instructor. So that was kind of where we were at before. So we conducted a survey of all active officers that had the program. We found that a majority of them had taken the class more than 8 years ago. And you can see the other kind of the breakdown of the graph there. We asked about their instructor experience. Most of them are actually training at academy or at the agencies. So the primary purpose for taking the class and where they're teaching is with the agencies. We do have a small number that had never instructed because they were most likely taking it for their mid-management certificate. The primary purpose for taking it, once again, most had the intention to be agency instructors or to complete their mid-management requirements. And then the least of the requirements was to become post-instructor. Since taking the course, most of them have taught in some form or the other. And so that's kind of the snapshot we had. And then also we asked them, if we had additional training, would you be interested? And they were able to select more than one. So we got a good response off this that they would be willing to come back and take additional training that's more focused in their field. Okay, so where we are now, we've standardized our curriculum. So we have a curriculum that is standardized across the state. We've aligned that curriculum with the philosophy of POST, how we want our instructors to teach in the classroom. We kind of have set aside, and we'll show you the proposal for this. They have a waiver for if they've taken a comparable course, and that's kind of in the proposal we'll have here in a minute. And then also we have a pathway for attorneys. So the difficulty I have with attorneys is attorneys, of course, will, you know, they're very difficult to bring in because they have their caseload. And so we wanted to have a pathway, a mentorship, so they wouldn't have to come to a 2 or 3 day program, that we could find a way that we could help them get trained through kind of a mentorship pathway. And so we've developed that. And then we've also integrated it with our skills programs. So if you take a defensive tactics or an EVO, you would have to then come back and go through the regular course. But we're going to integrate those, so when a person takes defensive tactics, they're kind of getting both the training. And then that pathway, and then we have these proposed renewal requirements. But the goals we wanted, and these are pictures you'll see that actually when we were training, this is down in Lehigh. We wanted them to understand how to apply. We're moving to competency-based for basic training. But we need our instructors. We can, our team can develop really, really good plans and programs and lesson plans. But if our instructors don't know how to implement it in the classroom, it doesn't really go far. And so this is kind of the missing piece to the puzzle. So we want to teach them how to facilitate, manage the classroom, and we actually have them practice and do activities and be engaged, and then we have them develop their own lesson plans and materials. And then the big thing from this, as you can see, we have them sitting in pods. We make sure they're getting peer feedback. So as they give their presentation speech, they're getting graded and evaluated from those in the classroom. And so that's kind of where we went with the course. I won't read all these, but these are all the instructional theories we did. You'll probably enjoy reading those, but we took all these educational theories every one of them, we showed this is exactly how you do it in the classroom, very simply. Here's your 3-step process to something that's a little more complex. And so the whole class is application. We actually have the goal less than 10 minutes of talking. So I'm probably talking more than we do in the class because they're up on their feet. They're moving around. Like in this one, we have portable whiteboards. They're engaged as a class. Here's another one where we have them role-playing in a circle. But we teach them presentation, facilitating, memory retention, time management, all these things. This is what we're giving our instructors in this class. Critical thinking, promoting professionalism and training, public speaking. We have them practice quite a bit of public speaking. So the course outline where we have it today is they do some pre-work, so 8 hours of online coursework. This is before the class. Then they come to a 2-day class where they work as a group on assignments. They practice the skills. And then after the class, they have a four-hour assignment. That's where they take everything they've learned and they develop their own lesson plan and submit it to us for a peer review and review. So it's a 3.5-day class where we're at now. So these are the classes we've offered this year and going to offer. You can see the enrollment. So we started in Davis County. We started to get going. We had 11 to 10. We had 25 open seats. Utah County, Salt Lake County, we still had some open seats. The Cache County one we had to cancel. We only had two register. But now we're kind of getting going, and our January and April class actually have a wait list here at Post. And then we just opened up our June class. So the goal is we want to at least offer 8 classes, and we'll start seeing these numbers fill up. So in total, we had 121 enrolled, but we did have 107 open seats, and now we have 15 on our wait list. So that's essentially what we've done to this point. So if you want me to move into kind of our policy changes, if that's okay. Okay. So in your packet, you'll see two policy changes. And these go along with kind of making this program work. The first one to talk about is the career development courses, and we'll take them one by one and let you have discussion on it. Part of the issue we saw, and you could see in that survey, is we're training officers that don't ever have an intention to come and teach at Post or even teach at their academy. They're completing Post instructor development because our policy says that in order for you to get your mid-management certificate, you have to take a Post supervisory, and you have to take a Post instructor development and a Post employee discipline, and then 2 credit hours from the agency. So our first proposal is that we allow the agencies to determine what is that instructor development. Is it their in-house training? Is it a peer program? Is it a field training officer? Is it they take a class on how to mentor other officers or evaluate other officers? Something the agency finds of value beyond just being a presenter in the classroom. And so we feel that by turning that over to the agencies, first of all, it lets the agencies address their direct needs for what they need. And it also kind of releases Post from pushing officers through our training program when we have a need where we're starting to get a capacity. So it kind of relieves that pressure a little bit. And then we have some changes on how the application happens. So if you want to, I guess, is there any questions on this one? Or discussion?
For a motion to approve these.
Yeah, so we can do one at a time if you want.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Are there any questions or discussions about the career development courses that we're looking at first, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so this is the career development one. Yeah, sorry, I had a slide on that.
3,100 career development courses. Are there any questions or discussion about those recommended changes? Seeing none, would entertain a motion to approve the changes as they're presented to the council.
So moved.
Raina Stevens, do we have a second?
Second.
Chief Swanson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed?
Okay, thank you. Okay, so this one's a little bit more, I'll give you a very high level with this. We need to conform the policy to the kind of things I already talked about. So these are the proposed changes at a high level, and you have a copy of the red line in your packet as well. So instructors are required to follow not only curriculum but lesson plans and instruction materials. That was missing. We put in a line there that they need to follow Post policy, our safety protocols. The director's been working on kind of standardizing our safety protocols, making sure that we have that aligned. And so we want to make sure that they follow those. And then also if there's any other material that said it had to be approved by the basic training lieutenant, we want to give that to the academy directors to approve any type of material. And then we have that policy focus that's put something for the attorneys. The policy was only written for peace officers and dispatchers, not professionals, not attorneys. So we want to expand that. And then allow a waiver. So if there's comparable training, if they've gone to FEMA, if they've gone to FBI, and there's a training that's equivalent, we want to allow that exception. This is the big one. We want the certificate to expire every 3 years. This is our only instructor certificate that doesn't expire. All of our skills, defensive tactics, firearms, EVO, K-9, all expire within 3 years, except the K-9 judges of 5. So we want to bring this in and say, you need to do something if you want to continually teach for post. We would like a renewal requirement. We plan on it being an online course, just to bring them up to speed, because like I said, most of our instructors were plus 8 years out. A lot has changed in education in the past 8 years. And then we bring in those instructor development to the skills. So you take one of those skills courses, you're also getting instructor development. The pathway for attorneys we want to account for. And then to kind of address this, what happens with everybody, we put in a grandfather clause. So a minimum of 2 years. So if they just took the class last year and they have a 3 year, they have 3 years. If they're already expired, we put in the policy, they get 2 years to come and renew basically their certificate. This is similar to what we did when we switched firearms over to a certificate. We allowed a grace period of 2 years so all the firearms instructors could come back and get recertified. So we're looking into that. We're trying to find a way to ease into this. And this is only for instructors that are teaching at post. So if the agency feels that they only need to come to the class and not renew, that would be an agency decision. It's just only when we're kind of talking about the instructors that teach at post, we want to make sure that they're renewing their certificate every 3 years. So those are kind of the high level points. There's a lot of red lines. So if you want to take a minute or just any questions.
Yeah, I have just a couple of questions.
Yeah.
So. You mentioned this is for the recertification for those teaching at post. I'm assuming that includes satellite academies.
Yes, yeah.
And so the intent would be those, I think your survey showed that a pretty good chunk of the instructors have had the instructor development maybe 8 years ago. All of those folks at some point would need to come back and do a recertification.
Yeah. Yeah. Within the next 2 years, if they're actively teaching at one of the academies. Now agencies can decide in their policy if they want to have their officers maintain that certification. But at least for post-basic training, we need our instructors to stay on top of the newest delivery methods, right?
Yes, Miley.
Certification, I do. I think it's imperative that post remains on top of everything that you are doing as you send these officers out to the world. So I love it.
Any other comments or discussion? See quite a few still reading through it. Maybe we'll just pause for a couple of minutes, let you look through that for a minute in case there are other questions.
You said you're only offering 5 classes this year?
We offered 8. So we will do 8, but we have a train-the-trainer program. Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office and Utah Department of Corrections and Davis County have already wanted to be trained to run the class. So the intent is that we will run 8 here, and then we will have these other agencies that want to run our program. They'll be trained the trainer for them. Yeah. Yes.
So after they've gone through the training, it's 3 years, and what is the 3-year kind of re-up again? It's like an online course?
We're going to do an online course, yeah. Yeah, so the purpose of that online course is, there'll be some homework, of course, with it, but whatever new developments we have new activities we're doing, different things like that. It just gets them back up on policy, on law. On any new instructional techniques. Like I said, as you know, things have changed quite dramatically on how we teach in the past couple of years. So it'll just be a refresher, but we want to make that online so it's not they don't have to come back to our class. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are there any additional comments or questions? Yes.
When they come back for recertification, is there a percentage base that they have to pass in order to be recertified to be the instructor?
Yes, it's competency-based. So they will complete whatever training we have, and then we will have, you know, like What they do now in the program is they have an assignment where they submit to us something. We grade it. But it's all based on a rubric, and it's competency-based. So it's not a take a 10-question quiz at the end of the training. And, you know, it won't be one of those, you know, see how fast you can click through. Yeah.
If there are no other questions or comments, we'd entertain a motion to approve post-instructor certification policy 3070.
Make a motion.
John Crowley.
Accept.
Janetta Williams is a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And are there any opposed?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, John.
I invite all of you to come to our class. Katie and Chelsea are awesome instructors, so please feel free to register for us. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And we'll move on to the disciplinary guidelines discussion. Captain Newland.
All right, Council, as you remember from last meeting, we had some discussion on some proposed changes to disciplinary guidelines. And once again, Post feels that these guidelines are guardrails not just for our investigations, but also reflect the will of the Council based on prior decisions. So we got several to go through. I'm just going to kind of run through these. You should have this document in your packet. Red is the proposed changes. So the first one is in Category B. With sexual conduct on duty, as you remember from last time, we were going to bifurcate physical contact, physical sexual contact, and the distribution or solicitation of sexual images. In Category B, we added the phrase, the second bullet point there, sexual conduct on duty, not including distribution or solicitation of sexual images as defined in Utah Administrative Code. The second one is new, and this is where I'd like some input on the council, is based on our feedback from council last time, there seemed to be, I think, some frustration in the council on cooperation with the post-investigative process. So that last one in B is one that we had kind of brainstormed as a way to kind of hopefully encourage participation in the investigative process. So Utah Code Annotated 536210 imbues the division with the power to issue subpoenas. It isn't something we do often, but if we decide to exercise that power a little more frequently in the future to encourage participation in the investigative process, one of the things that we felt could encourage that participation was making a violation or a refusal to respond to that subpoena a Category B violation, meaning that if the division properly serves and issues a subpoena, either failing to respond to that subpoena or, you know, disobeying that subpoena would be a Class B misdemeanor, but as far as our disciplinary guidelines, it would be considered a Class B, or Category B, excuse me, with the range indicated on Category B. And I take any input on that, but I'm happy to go through the rest of the recommendations first. Is there anyone on that one?
Is the idea that Post would start to issue subpoenas more regularly? Is that what you're...
Not necessarily.
In these situations where someone is not cooperating with the investigation, that you'd reserve that option in those cases that you anticipated would this body would want to see? Or how do you anticipate that?
It would be a case-by-case basis. We're not quite sure on that quite yet, but we don't anticipate issuing them any more frequently than we currently do. I think since I've been in this position, I think we've issued a handful, but it hasn't been much. The one thing that would definitely change with this is that right now we issue our subpoenas via certified mail. In order to comply with this statute, we feel that we'd have to actually properly physically serve people. So what would change is if we issue these subpoenas, the investigators or someone from Post would go out and physically either serve the involved officer or their counsel. That would change. But I don't anticipate us issuing any more subpoenas.
Yeah, but I do have a question.
Yes.
I'm sure the focus here is on an officer who is being investigated by Post.
Yes.
But does this potentially also include an agency who is subpoenaed for records by Post?
Possibly. And I kind of rely on the attorneys for that. I don't know. We usually issue subpoena duces tecum for that. I think it falls under the same statute. But I'm not positive on that.
Sheriff and or chief or head of the agency would be liable for this too.
Could it be as simple as changing this to specify an officer under investigation by the division?
Or do you want to do that?
And I think that's the question. If we specified it to the officers, is that something the council wants? Because, again, this is reflective of council's wishes.
I have a question.
So by utilizing this statute, is it simply just going to add more work to the post investigators just to simply achieve the same outcome? Meaning you'll issue a subpoena, people will come to the interview, but then not provide a statement, and we still have the same outcome, but you're adding more work to post investigators. Just a thought and a question, maybe a legal question for Townsend.
I think it's probably better for the attorneys, but it's my understanding that our subpoenas, when we issue them, do specify that they're coming in for a Garrity interview, and then the failure to answer under Garrity would trigger. But I think that's a question better left for the attorneys. But again, to answer your question, I don't believe it would add a lot more work simply because we don't issue that many. And again, we don't anticipate issuing more. So. Yes, ma'am.
Can you share your process as you go forward to contact these officers and or attorneys before, if this is accepted, before we move to the subpoena process? So what is it your officers do in order to reach out?
All right, I'm going to rely on the investigators to correct me if I get this wrong, okay? If I get it wrong. We usually send, we try and make contact via email, phone number, any contact we have form. Usually we've got a physical address within our database. Depending on how that goes, our first official start of the process is what we call a notice of agency action, which is an official piece of paper saying that, hey, we received this, we investigated it, we are planning on taking action for you, but that's after the investigation. So we try and make as much contact as we can. When we find out that they have a counsel, usually most of our correspondence goes through their counsel as opposed to directly to the officer. Mm-hmm. Usually we don't issue subpoenas unless it's something where an interview with the officer is absolutely critical to the investigation. It's just, in many cases, we have enough evidence to go forward even without the officer's cooperation. So it's rare that we have to issue these subpoenas. And we don't,
just clarify for me anyways.
Did I get any of that wrong?
You made a lot of steps.
Get in touch with them also if you utilize SIAC to get
contact. Okay, and that's a good point. If we can't get in touch with them, we will utilize the Statewide Information Analysis Center to try and find current contact information.
Can I make another comment?
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of have a concern with this, just for this. I mean, I agree that in post-counsel, we want people to participate in the investigation. It is problematic for all of us, but my concern that I have is now we're setting up people, they may be receiving counsel from their attorney to not come, and now we're setting it up to commit a Class B misdemeanor, to put them in a position to commit a Class B misdemeanor by not showing up to the interview. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think we need to consider that they're already being investigated for doing something wrong. Now we're potentially putting them in a position where they have to make a decision based on the advice they're receiving to commit another crime.
I say I want to address that because
I comment to that.
Yeah.
Jared, I think the Class B misdemeanor is already in code, right? This doesn't establish a higher.
No.
It establishes it maybe from
administrative.
A higher category of disciplinary sanction, but ignoring that subpoena would already be a Class A B misdemeanor, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's really just a procedural thing if we're making a decision to make that more common practice, I guess, is how I'm perceiving it.
No, so the only thing we're doing here is, anyone correct me if I'm wrong, but the only thing this does, it doesn't change the Class B misdemeanor, but it does make the administrative post sanctions more severe, or at least the guidelines for those sanctions more severe, in an effort to encourage cooperation with the investigative process.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's a step in the right direction because there's no question that sometimes when we open an IA on a officer, it's not uncommon for them to resign mid-investigation, which means we can no longer compel them to give us additional information. So you sometimes get an incomplete investigation, and you only get certain. You might only get a portion of the conduct proven, you know, enough to, I guess, for them, to terminate or for them to feel like they need to leave. What the post-investigation does is it allows them to follow up with some of the stuff that the agency wasn't able to confirm And so for if we've only hit the tip of the iceberg in our initial investigation, we don't have a lot of opportunity to see the rest of it. And this is an opportunity to compel them to come in and tell us, who is this human being that we're giving a gun and a car and telling them to take away people's freedoms? And so I think it's a second opportunity for Post to say, all right, by the way, your agency suspected the following. And they now get to answer that under a Garrity interview, where if it's partial and they think they're kind of, okay, you know what, they've got me on this, that's at tops a 2-year suspension. They just go ahead and take their lumps, and then they seek to come back in 2 years, where it might have been grown into an offense that would have been a revocation, that they have no business working in this. And this is an opportunity for us to have a second shot at confirming, does this person need a post certification, or should it be revoked? And I think anything we can do to compel them to participate in the investigation is a step in the right direction, and that's how I view this. And because there's no incentive if we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg of what's all the conduct that's gone on, because we can only take action on what we can prove. But once they resign, our investigation pretty much ends. I mean, our ability to question them about it ends. I mean, we can do everything else to try to confirm it, but our ability to interview is gone. And so I think this is a great thing that we can try to compel them to get in there for a follow-up interview with Post and at least hit them with some of the things that were left unsaid or undone or uninvestigated. So I think it's a step in the right direction.
I agree, 100%. I just would like some clarification that this gives you guys the teeth. They can show up, but what if they refuse to speak? Is that still, I think I just like some clarification that this still holds teeth. They show up when they're supposed to show up, but they refuse to participate.
And again, that's my understanding, and lawyers can correct me if I'm wrong, is that our subpoenas specifically say that you are being ordered to appear for a Garrity interview or a Garrity type interview. And at that point, if they refuse to speak under the Garrity, then I think that we still have a category A under fails to respond.
Just going to get an attorney to put a stamp on that.
Yeah.
Because he's saying, I believe, and I get that, but I think that we would want to know for sure this has a teeth.
Well, I think
we're heading in the direction that we're...
So from my perspective, it certainly gives more teeth. I think that the Garrity criteria is a violation if you fail to respond or fail to respond truthfully. So I think in the case that somebody shows up and gets the notice, puts them on notice that they are required to respond, if they then fail to respond, I think it certainly enhances the teeth that we currently have, unless I'm missing something.
Well, unfortunately, so we're bifurcated between the other DPS attorneys, so I don't do a whole lot of Garrity research, so I would have to defer to them.
We're getting one printed right now, so we just have to verify what the subpoena says.
Yeah, we don't know if it has the Garrity language in the actual subpoena or not.
I guess we'll clarify that.
I guess the question is then, if we approve this change in the guidelines, we could ensure later that the subpoena has that language that's needed. Yeah.
And just for clarification, this is just, it's already a Category D violation. So 536.210 for investigations by the division, for certifications and other testimony before the council, the division may administer oaths, affirmations, subpoena witnesses, take evidence, and require by subpoenas to them the production of relevant papers, records, and other documents or information, whether filed or kept in original form or electronically stored or recorded. A person who willfully disobeys a properly served subpoena by the division is guilty of Class B. So it's already under Category D because it's Class B.
Delta or Echo?
Delta, because it's a Class B.
Class B misdemeanor.
It's Echo. So you are correct. So I apologize. It is Echo. So we're moving it up to Category B. Post is inclined to do that because they want it to hold a little bit more weight.
And one of the things that I think I would like to do is I think the points are well taken that if this is vague and it could implicate an agency head or the lead of an IA division, maybe we clarify the language here. I think, Chair, what I'd like to do is go through the rest of these. If they're okay, make a motion to approve all but that one, come up with some better language, and maybe revisit that next meeting.
Sounds good.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on this particular one while they're getting that subpoena? All right. Category C and D, like we talked about last time, willful falsification of any application for training has been a category C. We wanted to drop that to D to make it more in line with most of this honesty but Garrity violations. Right now, once again, we're punishing applicants more than officers for a category 536211G violation, a dishonesty violation, and Post feels it would be a little more fair, quite frankly, to have that in D and make it just a little more congruent with the rest of the dishonesty, save for the Garrity violations. Any comments on that or questions? All right. Next is a category E on the second page. We are, once again, recommending that we bifurcate sexual conduct on duty, which does include the distribution or solicitation of sexual images. But as stated in the last meeting, Post view is this is becoming a little more common, and based on, I think, the justification for the restriction on sexual conduct on duty, this feels like a lesser offense. We don't want to take it out. We do want to make sure that officers are still adhering to the high standards that we require of them, but we are recommending if there is no other activity, if it's just the distribution or solicitation of sexual images, that would fall into a category E. Now, I think the discussion last time was on the specificity of the language. We intentionally left this a little bit vague, but I'm curious to any thoughts on the council.
I had a question on, can you clarify the part where it says defined in Utah Administrative Code?
Yes, I don't know the code off the top of my head, but in our definitions under Public Safety Administrative Rules, under Peace Officer Standards and Training, when it's talking about suspension or revocation, sexual images are defined in that code, under that rule.
And the reason why there is specifically language to the Administrative Code is because what's defined in the code as a sexual image is different than the statute.
Yes.
It covers a much broader range of sexual images than Utah code. So that's why it's making it clear this is under administrative code, not state statute.
Yeah, that's very good clarification, yes.
Can I have a follow-up question then?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have some boundaries around the solicitation and images to whom?
Yes.
Is this just the...
So that was some of the discussion last meeting. So one of the things that we've discussed with Post Council here is this would be aggravated possibly to a higher level if it was to, say, a non-consenting recipient, something like that. If the image was sent to someone that didn't ask for it, that didn't want it, something like that. Sexual images that are to people that can't receive that, like minors or children, things like that. It's vague in here, but one of the things that we've discussed with our legal counsel here is that within statute, we feel that the director has the discretion to recommend a sanction above the guidelines, just as the post council has the ability statutorily to recommend anything within letter of caution to revocation. And so what we would do, so for example, in a case, if it was all we had was distribution or solicitation of a sexual image to, say, a non-consenting party, the director would have the discretion to not leave it in E, but to aggravate that based on that aggravating circumstance beyond that E to something more severe, justifying that in writing. And that it's not in policy yet, but it will be.
Yeah, I guess my only concern is the language is incredibly vague, and I think the intent was usually it's, you know, coworkers or willingly mm-hmm. sharing that material, but it just feels very broad as defined here.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, does it matter if it's consenting, non-consenting, minor?
Right.
Does that change classification?
The only thing that's vague in here but is this described in administrative rule is on duty. So even in cases, like you said, between two consenting adults, if it's on duty, that's the problem. That's the thing that Post feels, and I think the legislature via statute has said the public doesn't want, whether it's between consenting adults or not. It's the on duty that's described in statute. The more aggravating circumstance you're talking about, say non-consenting recipients or minors or things like that, once again, we feel that we can rationally juggle that with the discretion that the director has.
And those would also be criminal.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Much more severe criminal offenses, yes.
Does the criminal offense of
the distribution of an animate image, which is the Class A, go back to the Category B? Only if it's a straight violation of admin code does it drop?
Procedurally, I think we'd take the Class A, not the sexual conduct on duty. Those excellent questions. Any others on that one? All right. The last one that we had proposed, once again, based on prior post-council decisions, was moving violations of BCIU CGIS and GRAMMA statutes, those sections listed there, 5310108, 63G2801, from Category E to Category F. Again, the reason that we are proposing that is because historically post-council's sanctions have fallen more within Category F than they have E. And once again, we want the guidelines to reflect the will of the council, so this would just make those decisions in congruence with the guidelines. Any other questions or concerns? All right. Then, Chair, what I think I'd be asking for would be a vote to exclude the subpoena in B, but approve the rest of them and allow us the opportunity to kind of tighten up the language on that subpoena violation.
Sorry. And would that motion make those effective today?
Yes. And before anyone makes that motion, the subpoena does say, you're hereby commanded to appear before the Utah Department of Public Safety, Peace Officer Standards and Training Division, to provide statements in accordance with the provisions of Garrity v. New Jersey, 385, and then a citation. So the Garrity provision is within our current subpoena.
Any further discussion or comment?
Chair, yes. With that, would we just be approving this holistically without that exclusion? Is that the suggestion?
Yes, we'd be approving the other changes to the disciplinary guidelines absent the
subpoena.
And then we would bring that back at a further time.
Back now that we've gotten
here. Yeah, we're comfortable.
Okay.
Language,
yeah.
We could certainly make that motion.
I'll make a motion. Should we approve as is? As written?
A motion by Sheriff Wimmer, a second by Melina Stevens. All in favor of approving the post-disciplinary guideline changes as presented, say aye.
Aye.
And are there any opposed? Okay, that passes.
Thank you.
I'd just like to thank the council for the robust discussion. I think it's important that we have good discussions about these matters as we consider them. So thank you for the discussion. And we will now move into our presentation of the disciplinary cases. Representing Post will be Attorney Blythe Cravens. And the first case we'll call is Daniel Argolara. Is Daniel Argolara or counsel present?
Daniel Argolara, he was with Salt Lake City Sheriff's Office for 9 years. The two offenses are obstruction of justice, which is a felony 3, and knowingly dishonest in violation of department policy. There were no mitigating circumstances. The aggravating circumstances are multiple counts. These are Category A and Category E offenses. The guideline baseline is revocation. The range is 3 years to revocation. Post is recommending revocation. Agency action was that Mr. Aguilar resigned in lieu of termination. The date of separation was December 13th, 2022. This is a default. The facts of the case are as follows. Daniel Aguilar was investigated for a shooting near his girlfriend's house. The investigation disclosed that on May 7th of 2022, Aguilar gave a false statement to the local police agency about what time he left his girlfriend's home that night. Aguilera was charged with obstruction of justice. On July 12th of 2024, Aguilera entered a guilty plea to obstruction of justice, a third-degree felony, as a plea in abeyance. Aguilera wrote a memorandum to his chief dated July 18th of 2022 regarding his role in the criminal investigation and did not disclose that he lied to the police. During a Garrity interview with Post and his agency, Aguilar admitted to lying to his supervisor about why he was being investigated criminally by the local agency. Aguilar did not believe that he hindered the criminal investigation when he provided a false timeline about his whereabouts during the shooting. Are there any questions?
I don't see anyone representing Mr. Aguilera here to speak, so we'll take it to the council for a motion.
Make a motion to accept post council or post's recommendation of revocation.
Okay, Chief Grohl makes a motion to accept.
Second.
Second by David Peterson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And are there any opposed?
The next discipline case is Matthew Alvarez. He was with Saratoga Springs Police Department for 13 years of service. His offense is unauthorized access of government records, a Class B misdemeanor. There are no mitigating circumstances. The aggravating circumstance is multiple inquiries. This is a Category E offense. The guideline baseline is 6 months. The guideline range is letter of caution to 1.5 years. Post is recommending 9 months. There's the agency action's not applicable. Date of separation was 8/24/2023, and he had a hearing. The facts of the case from the hearing, as found by the ALJ, are that Matthew Alvarez, a law enforcement certified officer, attended a legal hearing on behalf of his extended family regarding DCFS action against a family member whose case had been investigated by his agency. His employment as a police officer came up during the proceeding and was reported to his agency. An audit by Saratoga Springs Police Department was done to determine whether Alvarez had accessed the case file of his family member showed that he had accessed the case file multiple times, including creating a PDF of that file. A USCIS audit demonstrated that Alvarez searched for several individuals, including family members, with no known criminal justice purpose. Are there any questions?
You represent Mr. Alvarez. Would you like to speak to the council?
Thank you for being here, and thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. Matthew Alvarez.
Do you want me to state my name?
Yes,
please. This is Jason Sweat, counsel for Mr. Alvarez.
Okay. So thank you again for being here and this opportunity to speak with you today. I came today because out of respect for this council, and I feel that it's very important that I accept responsibility for my actions in person. Though I had no malintent, I acknowledge my mistakes and that I could have done things better. I recognize the gravity of the circumstances that I put myself in, my department, and law enforcement as a whole. I would also like to express that I am deeply remorseful, and I've learned a great deal from this experience. As a result, I am determined to take this opportunity and use it as an opportunity for positive growth moving forward. My honor and my integrity are very important to me, as is my career in law enforcement. A career that I stepped away from 16 months ago in August of 2023. I look forward to being able to put this behind me, to be able to move on. I look excited at the prospect and idea of being able to continue working again in this field. And with that in mind, I would like to request your consideration in allowing the record to reflect a reduced sanction as opposed to what's been recommended. I understand that a letter of caution is a big ask and is not one that I make lightly, but I would be very humble and immensely grateful to receive. However, I would be grateful to receive any leniency at any kind, no matter how slight. Thank you again so much for this opportunity, your time, and your careful consideration in this matter.
Mr. Alvarez, have you worked as a peace officer since separating from Saratoga?
I have not.
Even if we go by the recommendation, his time is done. Because he will go back to his resignation on August
25th. Any questions for Mr. Alvarez or his counsel? Sure. Curtis?
Why did you access the records? Is there a public safety connection?
I felt that the time there was. I was working for the department that was investigating my family, and my intent was I was logged into Spillman. I was attempting to access the local report written by the detective only. I did forget to uncheck the state BCI records in the process and didn't think much of it, but I did attempt to read the report, which was mentioned in the PDF, was the locally housed report written by the detective. It was in my same neighborhood that I live in. I saw I was a sex crimes detective in my neighborhood, so I accessed his report, or was attempting to access his report to see what was going on in that area, which my brother lives on the same street.
Any other questions? They would entertain a motion.
Does this move to F?
Yeah, I just wanted to give Dave Barnett here some credit. He just pointed this out as the this was a Category E at the time we did the hearing, but based on post counsel's motion and second that just happened, this would now be a Category F. So it would be a letter of caution to 1 year suspension, and the baseline would be 3 months. So I just wanted to have that on the record.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Would it be appropriate to decrease it to a 6 months instead of 9 months?
A motion for a three-month suspension, starting from the date of resignation.
Separation.
Yep.
We have a motion for 3 month suspension beginning August 24th of 23. Do we have a second? Chief Swanson has a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next disciplinary case is Brian Baggs. Mr. Baggs was with Weber County Sheriff's Office. For his years of service are 17. The offenses are DUI, which is a Class B misdemeanor, possession of a dangerous weapon by an intoxicated person, which is also a Class B misdemeanor. There are no mitigating circumstances. The aggravating circumstances are multiple counts, and the DUI was in a department vehicle. This is a Category D offense. The guideline baseline is 1 year. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. Post is recommending 2 years. Mr. Baggs resigned in lieu of termination. Date of separation is November 10th, 2023, and this was a waiver. The facts of the case are that on September 13th, 2023, Brian Baggs, a captain with the Weber County Sheriff's Office, was required to submit to a random drug and alcohol test. Baggs drove to work in his department-issued truck at around 8 a.m. He was also wearing a uniform and had a loaded handgun in his hip holster. Baggs drove a few times throughout the day and then eventually drove to the testing center around 3 p.m. Baggs supplied a breath sample at 3:27 p.m., which measured 0.44 BAC, and another sample at 3:44, which measured 0.41 BAC. During Garrity interviews with his agency and post, Baggs admitted he consumed about 10 to 12 12-ounce beers the night before and stopped drinking at midnight. He did not have any other explanation for testing positive for alcohol the next day. Post determined Baggs' BAC could have been between 0.11 to 0.28 at 8:30 a.m. He was likely between 0.14 to 0.17. Baggs was not criminally charged. Are there any questions?
Mr. Baggs, would you like to address the council?
Yes. Thank you.
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Brian Baggs. I thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity to speak to you today. This is somewhere where I never thought I would be. When I promoted to sergeant, I started listening to these hearings so I could try to keep my staff from repeating mistakes of others who have come before this council. As embarrassing as this is, I sincerely hope that others can learn from my mistake. I knew I had a drinking problem. I had started therapy with a substance abuse specialist about 8 months prior to this event. I had consulted with my physician and tried different medications. I had some short bouts of success, but never managed to control my problem. Conversely, I always thought I was a responsible drinker. that thought changed drastically the day of this incident. I had drank the night before but woke up feeling normal. It's not something I'm proud of by any means. The day started with a short telephone conversation with Sheriff Arbin. Then I got ready and went to work at 9 a.m. It said 8 in the thing, but I'd left for work at 8:40, 8:45, if that matters. At no point did I feel any effect of alcohol. I know given the facts of this case, it is easy to imagine a stumbling, stammering drunk in a sheriff's uniform, but that wasn't the case. At the time of this incident, I was assigned to the animal shelter. I attended our 9 a.m. meeting. Chief Perry was in attendance. I worked with the shelter staff and animal control throughout the day. I had spoken with the director of the animal shelter, who was California Highway Patrol for 15 years. None of these individuals noticed any sign of intoxication. I was notified of a random drug and alcohol test by email shortly after 9 a.m. Weber County's policy allows 24 hours from the time of notification. The Ogden Work Med opens at 7:30 a.m. If I thought I had something to hide, I could have waited and taken the test the following morning. But I thought nothing of it and took the test on my way home. I was shocked when the result came back positive, and additionally shocked when I found out the level of alcohol was still rather high. I hope you believe me when I say I wouldn't put on a badge, gun, and drive if I thought I even had small amounts of alcohol in my system. I had over 700 hours of leave saved up and was at user lose on both sick and vacation leave. I didn't have anything pressing at work that day. If I had any indication I still had alcohol in my system, I could have easily called in sick and no one would have batted an eye. I knew when the test came back positive, my life would change forever. I've managed to break the cycle of alcohol abuse, which back then was something I often doubted I could ever do. It is truly liberating to have success with sobriety after 20 years of overuse and abuse. I wish it didn't take a random drug test to find out I was living so dangerously, but in many ways I am grateful this incident occurred, and incredibly grateful that I didn't find out in a much worse way. As stated, the facts of this case were presented to the chief prosecutor in Weber County, who stated that given the circumstances and with no signs of intoxication, it wasn't something he would be interested in pursuing criminal charges for. It was my understanding that this would be the case for anyone under those circumstances, and that there was no special treatment. I am passionate about this profession, and I want the opportunity to start over, to attempt to redeem myself, and be a positive influence both on other officers and the public. In my 17 years with Weber County, I rose to the rank of captain. I was the highest ranking person in the department who wasn't elected or appointed. That was a great honor to me. I've had the opportunity to bring in millions of dollars in federal grant funding and was the project manager for a grant designed to assist those with addiction, ironically. My team also brought in grant funding to assist in those reentering society from incarceration or homelessness. To be very clear, those projects aren't personal achievements because they all took a vast and varied team throughout Weber County. But my passion was in trying to give people the best chance of building a life that didn't involve returns to incarceration. Some of the things over the course of my career, I instructed at the Weber State Academy for over 10 years. As a new sergeant, I rebuilt the jail's tactical team after years of the office unnecessarily putting our staff in danger. I commanded this team for about 5 years. As a lieutenant, I was on the front of learning and inventing how to manage a jail with a global pandemic. I had the opportunity to be assigned as the legislative liaison for the sheriff's office, and for two sessions spent time at the Capitol. I had the opportunity to influence some legislation, speak in committee hearings, participate in law enforcement legislative committee meetings, and CCJJ meetings. I also sat on a CCJJ committee on searches that was mandated by the legislature. I know for some on the council, things like that are just an average day, but for me, it was a massive honor. I know I'll never get back to that level of honor and influence, but I am hopeful that I will still be able to make an impact on an individual level going forward. To close, I would like to show my appreciation for Sheriff Arbin and Chief Perry for their compassion through my investigation and ultimate dismissal. I also want to thank them for their kindness in checking on me after separation from the office. And it's still nice to be able to use them as a job reference going forward. I would like to point out that I was very honest in my investigations and volunteered incriminating information. So the investigators knew I knew. So the investigators had all the information that I had going into their decision. This investigation and resulting action has been a major cause of stress for over a year. The fear of the unknown has haunted my thoughts every day. I'm grateful for my wife and family for their support and support from those in the sheriff's office who have stuck with me and checked in on me throughout the last year. I still see my therapist every other week and have made wonderful improvements in my life. I understand the gravity of my actions and I will forever be filled with regret. I am hopeful I will be able to start looking for a new home in law enforcement, and I humbly ask the council for some forgiveness and leniency. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate your service to this council and the service in your respective areas. And with that, I'll turn the time back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Baggs. Have you acted as a peace officer since your separation?
I have not.
Are there any questions or comments?
Just to post, usually when we are handing out a 2-year suspension for something similar, there's usually a DUI or criminal charges involved in a blood test, and there were no criminal charges on this, so I'm wondering why the recommendation is about the same we would give to someone who was DUI and was at a 0.24.
Yeah, it's usually a higher BAC as well, like a
0.25. Right. This was a 0.04 with some assumptions that are mainly legitimate assumptions, but.
Mr. Baggs, will you yield the podium to?
Oh, yes.
The reason why, so he waived, and we treated it the same as we would if he had pled guilty to a Class B misdemeanor, because it was our belief that we could prove by clear and convincing the criminal conduct if we went to a hearing. So that's why we have the recommendation we do.
I guess I just ask how we could prove that. His breath test was a 0.04. How would you prove that it was because you got to be above 0.05 for a DUI.
Correct.
Or show impairment.
So we went backwards, and Captain Newland provided that analysis.
For the council's, I guess, information, I'm the state's recognized expert in retrograde extrapolation. The data was there for this one, so I actually prepared a report for this one. I've testified in probably 12 different trials on retrograde extrapolation that is accepted in court.
Very good.
Are there any other questions for post-counsel or for Mr. Baggs? I entertain a motion.
I don't make a comment because I feel like everybody's struggling with this one a little bit. And we just got done talking about the importance of cooperation with post-investigations, and in this case, it feels like Officer Baggs did that. Also, I think many of us are very aware of substance abuse, but addiction to controlled substances and alcohol and the challenges that poses in people's lives. And I'll admit I'm becoming a big softy with the Department of Corrections, but I do see the opportunity for people to take ownership for their mistakes, but also and be held accountable. And in this case, it feels like we may want to consider being a little more lenient based on his cooperation and his history and the fact that he is here taking complete ownership in his mistake. So I don't know what that means for a recommendation. I just wanted to get that on record.
Appreciate that.
With that, I mean, even looking at the baseline is 1 year, and we're doubling that almost to the maximum 2.5 years. I'd feel more comfortable with something at least a year and a half to decrease that. And there's still an aggravating factor with that additional 6 months above baseline. But it seems, I agree, a little extreme to double that baseline almost to the maximum for this case.
Would you like to make that a motion?
Sure. I move that we change the suspension to a year and a half instead of the post recommendation of 2 years.
Motion by Belina Stevens. Do we have a second?
Second.
Ron Anson. is a second. The motion is for an 18-month suspension.
To begin a date of term, or the date of resignation, 11/10/23.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Thank you.
The next disciplinary case is Jake Barker. I don't believe he's going to be here, or his attorney. They spoke to me. He was a reserve with the Nephi PD at the time. He has 9 years of reserve service. The offense is disorderly conduct as an infraction. The mitigating circumstance is the minimal nature of the offense. The aggravating circumstances, there aren't any. This is a Category F. Guideline baseline is 3 months. Guideline range is letter of caution to 1 year. Post is recommending letter of caution. He's still employed as a reserve officer with Nephi PD. There is no date of separation, and this was a waiver. The facts of the case for Mr. Barker are that he was a certified peace officer. He got into a dispute with a city dump. It was actually the Payson City Dump after he asked for a refund of a previous fee, which was denied. Barker demanded a supervisor and blocked the dump's pay window with his truck and trailer, preventing other patrons from accessing the window while waiting for the supervisor. When the supervisor arrived, he refused to give Barker the refund. Barker did not move his truck until after the supervisor took a photo of Barker and his truck in front of the pay window. The police filed charges against Barker. On August 31st of 2023, Barker entered a guilty plea to a plea in abeyance for disorderly conduct as an infraction. Barker's plea of guilty was withdrawn, and the case was dismissed with prejudice on March 5th of this year. Are there any questions?
How much was the refund? You're supposed to know.
He was charged $50, and he said because he was a resident, I think he was only supposed to pay $20, so I think he was wanting $30.
For $30, but I'll make the motion. We accept post recommendations.
Okay, thank you.
We have a motion from Sheriff Wimmer. Do we have a second?
Second.
Wayna Stevens, the second. Are there any additional discussions or questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 And are there any opposed?
The next disciplinary case is Elizabeth Bennett. Elizabeth Bennett was with Salt Lake City PD at the time. She had approximately 4 months of service. The offense is sexual conduct on duty. Mitigating circumstances are the minimal nature of the offense, non-physical conduct, and a single incident. There are no aggravating circumstances. This is a Category E offense. The baseline is 6 months. The range is letter of caution to 1.5 years. Post is recommending a letter of caution. The Salt Lake PD, they gave her 10 hours of no pay with a letter of reprimand. Date of separation was, that's a typo. There was no date of separation. The adjudication is it's a default, and the facts regarding that case are the following. She was investigated, Ms. Bennett was investigated by her agency for engaging in sexual conduct on duty. Ms. Bennett took a single nude photograph of herself in the bathroom of Salt Lake City PD's public safety building while she was off duty prior to her shift. Ms. Bennett then sent the unsolicited photograph to a fellow officer. Ms. Bennett and the fellow officer were intimately involved with each other off duty. The photograph was sent from the PSV building. Bennett and the fellow officer were on duty when the photograph was sent. Ms. Bennett admitted to sending an unsolicited nude photograph to the officer during her agency Garrity interview. Are there any questions?
It's actually going to be a category out now based on the new criteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was one of the cases that we discussed that resulted in us recommending a change.
Ms. Bennett, would you like to address the council? Please state your name for the record.
Yes, sir. I'm Elizabeth Bennett. Good morning, Council. I appreciate you guys being willing to hear from me today. I understand now the ramifications of my actions. At the time of this incident, I was a brand new officer and did not understand or realize that I was violating a policy. And I'm extremely embarrassed of this situation, but I love the career that I'm in, and I'm very grateful to be able to serve my community and hope to be able to continue to. I'm very passionate about this job and the people that I serve, and I hope to continue to be able to do that. So thank you.
Thank you. And just for clarification, this is a Category E under the new guidelines.
Yes, this is an E.
Any questions for Ms. Spaggs? Or Ms. Bennett, sorry.
Make a motion. Motion that we go with the recommendation of letter of counsel. And say good timing.
Motion from Chief Swanson to accept post recommendation. We have a second. Sheriff Curtis is a second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Thank you.
The next disciplinary case is Martin Berta. Mr. Berta was with West Jordan PD. He had 16 years of service. The offenses are possession or use of a controlled substance, which is a Class B misdemeanor, and unable to possess a firearm under state or federal law. There are no mitigating circumstances. The aggravating circumstance is multiple offense. The category is a Category D. The guideline baseline is 1 year. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. Post is recommending suspension until November 26 of 2025 due to the medical marijuana card. There's no agency action. And the suspension is based on the marijuana use from 11/27 of 2023. This was a waiver. Martin Berta was a post-certified or is a post-certified law enforcement officer. He was administratively investigated for possession or use of marijuana. The findings of the investigation showed that he knowingly and intentionally used marijuana in an unlawful manner. Berta subsequently resigned from West Jordan PD, and his case was referred to Post. The Post investigation proved through clear and convincing evidence that Berta knowingly and intentionally used marijuana in an unlawful manner and that he is federally restricted from possessing a firearm due to his previous possession of a medical marijuana card. Are there any questions? And just for clarification, the date for the suspension is based on when he relinquished his medical marijuana card, and under federal law, there's a one-year suspension from date that you give up your medical marijuana card. So that's why the suspension date is until November 26th of 2025. And this is a federal restriction, not a state restriction, on possession of a firearm.
Thank you. Looks like Mr. Berta and counsel is here. You'll be able to address the council. We've also received a request from Chief Wallentine to address the council on this matter. Mr. Jorgensen has reviewed our rules and didn't find anything that prohibits Chief Wallentine from addressing the council. So unless there's an objection from the body, we will give a few minutes to Chief Wallentine after Mr. Berta and his counsel has spoke. Are there any objections? Sheriff Lewis.
I think it's a little bit out of practice. We invite them to send a letter and then review the letter, but I haven't ever had another agency lead show up and try to speak on behalf or as representation or what have you. So I'm a little cautious of it to set some sort of precedence that from now on agency heads are now going to be invited to address the council versus do what the tradition is, and that is send a letter.
And just, is there something that prohibits that within our guidelines, or is that just kind of the practice that we've
had? Nothing in the rule. I'm just going to provide historical context because I probably have been around the council probably one of the longest. The reason they have they allow the letters to be sent, and the reason is so it doesn't create a disparity for the individuals that are sitting on the council, because the chiefs and sheriffs and the heads that would be sitting on the council would create an awkwardness where they would be standing up and presenting. And so that's why in the past they just have the letters. So again, just historical context, however you guys decide to proceed is however you guys decide to proceed.
So the post is required to forward any information or comments received from the employer to post council. So it's kind of the gray area where they're not written comments. So
I guess the most appropriate thing would be to take a, if someone wanted to make a motion to disallow Chief Wallentine from speaking, to make that motion. Otherwise, we would allow it.
So if I can make a comment, just in all due respect, Sheriff, I would, if any chief or sheriff or any agency head wants to take their time and come to address the council to discuss an employee of theirs, whatever they're going to discuss, I would welcome that. We have welcomed, but we have had the letters in the past. And again, being a member of post council for just over a year now, I don't have the historical context that most here do, but if we have an agency head, whether it's from a sheriff's office, a police department, DPS, that wants to address an individual that was under their employ and whatever they want to, whatever their statements might be, I would want to hear that personally.
I agree, unless they sit on post council.
Well, and perhaps it begs a broader conversation in the future as far as how this body wants to, as far as how this body wants to proceed into the future. I mean, I think that there are legitimate concerns both ways as far as Chief Wallentine today. I would agree with Chief Willem that he's here hearing his comments, but if we as a body say no, that creates a discrepancy. We agree with Sheriff Wimmer that this should be written. I think that that would beg a broader conversation, and we should put that into our rules if that's the case and the decision of this body, so there's clarification for that.
Thank you.
I don't have major heartburn about it. I just want us to be aware that we are changing a practice, at least for the couple years I've been here, practice that has been the tradition. And I would disagree that if you're on the council, you should still be able to get up there and speak, because you're going to remove yourself from that vote anyway if it's your employee. And so I think Chief Wallentine has influence, but, you know, regardless, and that's why we want to hear from him, is because of the influence a chief or a sheriff carries. And so though I'm on the council, if I withdraw my participation in the vote, I should be able to comment yay or nay on an employee that's coming before you.
But then, so if you accept that not on the council, that means that Sevier County's out, Tooele County's out, Corrections is out.
Right.
All out. So that means it's creating an unequal treatment towards all other agencies that don't have representation on this council.
But couldn't they have someone else, like, you know, stand before them and talk, just as long as it's not the council member? Because I do see a conflict of interest if anybody at this table was to go up there.
The are from the chief, sheriff, or administrative officer. So it's kind of got to be the top guy to make the comments. So
when there's been letters...
It's a supervisor. It's got to be the chief, sheriff.
When there's been letters in the past that have been written by members of this council, which there have been several through the years that I've been on this, I believe that we've had opportunity to ask that person questions. They have not responded.
Because when they recuse themselves, from consideration and comment.
Okay. Thank you.
So I would submit to your comment, I think that, to me, having a letter from somebody that sits on this council has the same weight as if they were to stand up. At least it does in my mind. If any agency head is going to take the time to write a letter, whether in support or not of the employee, that does give weight, and it doesn't matter if they sit on this council or not. But there's still an opportunity, if one of my officers were to appear before council, for me to at least write that letter. And I think there's, you know, it should be given the due weight that any agency not because I'm here on Pulse Council, but any agency that wants to do that.
So one of the responsibilities of this council is to provide advice to the director, so maybe we could advise some clarity to the rules and guidelines on this matter going forward. But for today, is anyone wishing to put forward a motion to disallow Chief Wallentine from speaking? Seeing none, and I apologize for that delay. Mr. Berta, time is yours.
Martin Berta. Council, ladies and gentlemen, council, and also attendees, grateful to be here. I do come here with the spirit of humility and penitence, and just would like to quickly go over my timeline to understand a little bit of what happened, get the backstory. I served 23 years with the military, multiple combat deployments. I have been diagnosed with PTSD. I've served approximately 16 years with multiple law enforcement in the state of Utah. Both of those services to me have been honorable, with exception of this decision that I took. Sometime around October 2023, a family member of mine returned from Las Vegas with edible. At that time, I was going through PTSD withdrawals. I had my children taken away from me through court proceedings. They had left to South America. It was a perfect storm for me at that time, unfortunately. And I was not sleeping. I was a sergeant at that time with a great crew. And I had many resources that I could go to, but I failed to do that. So in October, when I wasn't sleeping and I was putting myself as a leader of a crew in precarious situations, and my family life was being destroyed, my wife advised me to take the edible. I didn't ask any questions at that time. I was very desperate to find a solution. I had the VA give me multiple prescriptions for many, many things in my 23 years of service, which simply just didn't help. When I took that edible, I knew what I was doing. I didn't know the content or the dosage. I knew that it was my last resource, and I knew that it had come from Las Vegas, and I knew that I didn't have a prescription, and I took it. For the next 3 to 4 weeks, any time that I spiraled mentally and was afraid for the next day to go to work or put my guys or gals on the line, I would take a gummy to sleep. Unfortunately, throughout those weeks, it allowed me to rest. It allowed me to be present with my family, and it allowed me to do my job because I was getting the rest that I needed. Prior week and a half, 2 weeks prior to the urinalysis, I had taken my last gummy. I knew that I was going to test positive when I was called to do your analysis test with West Jordan. I did pop hot for THC. The agency that took the exam asked me if I had a medical marijuana card at this time. I told them that I did not, and that I would provide my agency with the matter of facts. I called my agency directly immediately after that and advised my leadership of the situation, and that's when the IA began for me. Went through the internal investigation, resigned, and I needed to get some help. That was not the Martine that I knew. So at that time, I immediately got back with the VA, which I hadn't done for many years, and I began doing group therapy and individual therapy to work through my matters. And within this past year, I've actually, what's helped the most is probably the fact that I've
I reignited relationships with my children that were taken from me. Two of them are back here in the States, and mentally that has just been a load off my back. During the investigation and even during the conversation with the agency that took the initial year analysis, there was a lot of information that was talked about, and one of the things that was talked about was if I did or did not have a medical marijuana card at that time. It appeared that maybe the laws would have been different, and I honestly don't, till this day, understand. I know that it was wrong, but there's so much gray with medical marijuana. So talking to my wife, we wanted to have a backup just in case things spiraled as I continue to do my therapy. And I thought I was doing the right thing, so I did go and get consulted to get a medical marijuana card. But the facts are that because I was getting help from the VA, because I was getting help from my local denomination, and just things were getting better in general, I did not need to use that. I never used it from the point that I got it to the point I relinquished it. I hadn't heard anything from the department or post as far as where the investigation was, and I wanted to make sure that I was present here with you to be accountable for my actions. So I reached out to post, inquired of where it was, and it wasn't anywhere across their desk yet. So I advised them of what had happened. They took the initial phone call information and then advised me that they would be back in touch with me to have me come in for a Garrity. Shortly after I came in for the Garrity, sat down with the two investigators, extremely professional, and conducted the Garrity. They advised me the same that has been talked about here as far as the recommended suspension starting from the date that my medical marijuana card was relinquished. And I understand. I understand the laws and the federal guidelines that we're talking about today. I just want to close by not by focusing on what I did, but what I've done since I left what I regard as just the best department. I've stayed busy because I've gotten better. I've consulted private security companies on the Guardian Angel program, been deeply involved in that. Because of what's happened, I also thought it was necessary to reach out to a local company that does a lot of peer support, and have done many, many peer support hours and check-ins with officers throughout the Wasatch Front. So going back to being here with a spirit of humility, excuse me. And penitence. I have had nothing but the hand of mercy extended to me by the people that I apologize. The people that have chosen in me and were there for me, even through the resignation and the eventual this eventual council hearing. I appreciate the council's time, and I do ask that you please look at me not from the perspective of this one single decision, horrible decision I made in my career, but for the person that I am, and for the service that I have given to the state, and the desire to continue to serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berta. Just one quick question before you step away. Have you acted as a peace officer since your separation from West Jordan a year ago?
No, sir.
Thank you. Counsel, did you wish to speak?
I
Mr. Walland.
I understand the awkwardness. I've sat on post counsel for quite some time, and I first got to know Martin Berto when he was just days from going overseas to combat zone as a United States Marine. At the time, I was serving as administrative counsel for the post counsel over two decades ago. He's worked for me. I recruited him. I asked him to come to my department. I did so because I knew him. I knew his character. I knew his quality. I knew his kindness. I knew his compassion. I knew that he would be an excellent officer for my city. You've seen such a just a snapshot of the service that he's given as a United States Marine, as an officer in our armed forces, as the very tip of the very front of the spear in combat zones far across the sea. One thing that sets him apart, I think, from many people who will come before you in hearings is the minute you receive, the minute you restore his certification, I'll take him back. I want him in my police department. I understand the mistake he made. I have consulted my own city attorney, my own city administration. The majority of my command staff is here today. I'm joined by my two deputy chiefs. They support me in my decision to bring him back. I realize he had a medical marijuana card, but you know, my mother, who's nearly 90 years of age, has a driver's license. She doesn't drive. She doesn't use that card, thank goodness. Over half the people in this state who have voter cards in the last election didn't use that card. I have a bar card. Allows me to practice as an attorney. I've had it for decades. I don't practice as an attorney except when some chief or sheriff calls up and wants advice. This is a man who had a challenge. Like many of the other challenges in his life, he met it head on. He was straight up with me. He came in and told me what was going on and apologized that he would have to resign from my department. I am urging the council to exercise the clemency that you have the power to exercise. Yeah, the federal guideline says there's an inference of use. But you just heard uncontroverted testimony that he hasn't used marijuana since the time he left. I couldn't say any better than Shakespeare, who said that in the course of justice, none of us should see salvation, that mercy seasons justice. You have the power now as a council to exercise, I believe, mercy seasoning justice in a very appropriate way. I ask you to limit the suspension to 1 year and allow this man to come back into my police department where I know that he will serve many years. There aren't many people in this world that I would willingly march into combat with. There are not many people that I would send to back up my daughter who's a deputy sheriff or my son who's currently serving in a combat zone in the Middle East in the midst of that boiling conflict. Martin Berto is one of those people. I trust him absolutely and I want him back. Thank you.
Thank you. Council.
Good morning, Council. My name is Jason Sweat. I'm the counsel for Martin Berto. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I've established excellently the character of Martin Berto. And I just want to speak really quickly to the law. And I know that you've indulged in Martin Berto and the chief trying to take a little extra time, so I'll try to be extremely succinct. I know it's nobody's desire to roll out of bed and listen to an administrative law seminar early on, but we'll be really quickly. What the chief asked for, I just want to clarify really quickly. It's not a year in clemency down from it. A year would be fine. What we're asking for is a year to be counted from his actual admitted last use, not from the time he had a marijuana card. And the big crux of this is very simple. You, as a post counsel, have the ability to establish a baseline, sort of a bright line rule as to whether a medical marijuana card is enough to say that's use or not. They laid out the logic and the reasons why Martin Berto is a good example as to why not make that the case, but I'll just supply you with a little law. What we were supplied with as an explanation as to why it's being touted as federal rules is the Federal Criminal Justice Information Services Division, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS section, is a document where they look at what the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Explosives have done as an interpretive matter to try to provide guidelines on who and who should not have firearms. Again, this is a guideline that's national, it is federal, but it is interpreting the statute, it isn't the weight and effect of law. It's an agency looking at that themselves. Particularly troubling would is if you were to take that and adopt it whole hog without a question, is this isn't an agency that controls exactly what's happening here as far as post standards for the state of Utah, an officer here in the state of Utah. And the reason it's troubling is this is a guidance document to interpret another agency's application of the Gun Control Act. And remember, this is for everybody in the country to have a firearm, not an officer who's sworn to these specific standards, who has submitted to not one but two Garrity interviews, willingly cooperated in the investigation, and there was discussion earlier as to how that kind of is something that means something to some folks here, and I'm happy that's the case because he went through all those interviews with no attorney present, doing his best to be honest, got a little bit of some information as to whether a medical marijuana card would have been good or not, obtained one, never used one, you heard why, and so it comes before you now as to whether you can make an inference to say, that's it, medical marijuana card, that means he was using, therefore start the clock running from that time, or to say, no, that's not actually very logical, we don't have any evidence to that effect. A rational basis, a reasonable basis analysis, we believe very strongly in a tertiary review subsequent, if necessary, would see that you have evidence that he used on the day he said, November or October 2023, and never subsequently. You either trust him or you do not. If it's an honesty issue at play, that's a bigger deal in a lot of ways for a police officer than any other matter. You could be basically unemployable if you have an honesty issue. The fact that he was seeking treatment, got a medical marijuana card in the case he ever had a need for it, learned that that wasn't appropriate, surrendered it. We have actually in our possession the record of the purchases made under that card, which are zero. He never actually used it. He just had it as a safety net and then learned quickly that, hey, that's not okay. Okay, great, I relinquish it. Self-informed to the post to sort of resolve his matters because he does have a desire to serve. At that time, initiated the post-investigation. So I think you can see here a couple of nexuses. A good person who wants to serve. And I think you'd be depriving West Jordan and the state of a valuable servant if you were to adopt this recommendation and implement the suspension from the time he surrendered his medical marijuana card and ignore all of the evidence that he hadn't used and ignore the actual spirit of the law, which is a person who's used should not have a gun for a year since that they consumed. And in his case was November last year. So we'd ask twofold. One, that you don't adopt that rule, that you take a year suspension, but that you make the post decision from here and going forward that a medical marijuana card is interesting and it can be used for inferential purposes, but you need more evidence that had been used, some sort of positive drug test, some sort of corroborating testimony or self-declared. And it's interesting, and we can go way into the logic of the legalities. In fact, the same guidance talks about how a grower's card isn't inferential. Just having 6-foot high weed plants in your house legally doesn't infer use, yet just having the medical marijuana card might. So there's a lot of disconnect, but I think it comes down to this is a good person with a lot of integrity that wants to serve. It would be, I think, the post's best decision to let him serve the recommended suspension of a year, but from the time he did use, not from the time he had a card. Because I think that's a miscarriage of an application and a very thin stretch from guidance to actual what controls you folks. And if for some reason the card is dispositive and you think that is something that's worth marking in indelibly in the record, then we would ask for the leniency down to 6 months at the minimum so that he could rejoin his brothers and sisters and service at West Jordan, and you wouldn't be depriving the community of a valuable officer any longer. And I think that's the law part of it. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions for either Mr. Berta's counsel or for Post counsel?
Just for Post. So is it my understanding he obtained the card on the 18th of June, and then was, let's see, so he was interviewed by Post November 26th, 2024?
Yes.
So he was just recently interviewed by Post?
Yes, this is very recent.
Okay.
So it's a year from when he got rid of his card? Is that why the date is the November 26th date?
That's post-position, that he's restricted from possessing a firearm, and that's for a year based on federal law.
I'm just saying it's a year from when he, I mean, because his card naturally expires in June 18th of 2025.
Right. He relinquished the card on November 26th of this year.
So just for a little clarity for me, I mean, I think Mr. Berta's presentation is compelling. Obviously, I think we're all moved to mercy, but I think as a body, we want to make sure that we don't set up an officer or an agency or the public in a very difficult and, for me at least, somewhat confusing element of law, right? As I understand it, the issue here is that according to the federal law or rule or guideline, he would be considered a restricted person until a year from the date that he relinquished that card. And so if we didn't suspend him for until November 26th of 2025, the potential is that he would be serving as a peace officer but still be considered by federal law as a restricted person. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that's post position.
DCI would also suspend or not issue a concealed weapons permit if there is a medical marijuana card because of federal restrictions.
But is that, if they, I mean, I understand that if they have the medical marijuana card, they wouldn't get that through BCI, but if they had relinquished it, would BCI have a timer from the date of relinquishment
it's
for a
year?
It's
1 year from last use.
Okay, I just want to make, from last use, which would be decided.
But it's presumed that if you have a card, okay, and you've got a card, you have a medical condition that meets the criteria for the issuance of a medical card, so therefore your use is based on that card.
So there's consistency with how these other agencies are dealing with this as well, is what you're saying?
Yes.
For what POST is recommending?
On the Brady checks and everything, it's... And the statute does require that we be authorized under Utah and federal law.
And I guess that would be my next question to POST and those who have been here much longer than I have. Have we ever disregarded the federal law or guidelines or rule? And if we start, where do we end?
I don't think we do. I don't think we can disregard it. I think we had a pretty healthy discussion. I can't remember how many years ago, especially when this came out, the fact, and if the state law also says they cannot act as a peace officer because of it. So I don't know if we even have the ability to say, look, we're only going to give you 1 year suspension because that's where it falls in, because we still have that state law that says you cannot act as a peace officer. So even if we just say, look, fine, you can't have a gun, we still have the issue at hand would be in violation of state law, the way I understood it. I think that's why POST took the discussion or the discretion that we did, is because we want to be very clear that we can't just say, yeah, here's your badge and your uniform. But
so just, Brad, just historical information. It was the discussion that we had regarding the SFO and whether or not we were going to allow the sheriffs to split the SFOs from the LEOs. That's where we had the lengthy discussions as to whether SFOs were going to continue, if the sheriffs were going to allow them to have that firearm and operate without the firearm. For corrections and also for the sheriffs. So I'm just giving
that was the other side of it.
Yeah.
Because even then, you can't give them firearms.
Yeah.
Careful, are you careful?
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't want to discount Mr. Berta's service to the country and to the citizens of this great state. I think it's very commendable and remarkable with his work history. However, we're not discussing whether he was a good employee or a bad employee. And had he not shown up today, or if he was a questionable employee and his chief didn't write a letter or appear, I think we'd be taking the POST recommendations. This is, to me, a bit of a POST policy issue. What are we going to do moving forward on these conversation, if we don't have a history of deviating from federal law, and I find it hard to deviate from the post recommendation, because unless someone tells me otherwise, that is what we have historically done and upheld. And you know, and maybe this is the catalyst to a broader discussion, but I don't know that now's the change, time for the change.
Councilor, did you want to make another comment?
Yeah, simply because I just wanted to clarify one point. The word federal law is very broad and statement very difficult in application, and so, yes, there's been an interpretation. I actually have several years of news stories that I printed out of post decisions of when it was legal in Utah and sort of the difficulty in wrangling with it, so I appreciate the gray area. I just want to make abundantly clear. The guideline documents that I've had that we've been pointing to isn't statutory text. It's agency interpretation documents, twice removed, right? It's the NCIS interpreting the ATF, what they may do. So you, under that, can infer, may, big M-A-W or M-A-Y, right? May infer based on the marijuana card. It doesn't say you must. And, of course, that doesn't get into any of the discussion about if this person's been investigated, has stated on the record, and has some other sort of things going on. In this case, of course, is distinguishable because all that has occurred. The record says that he used last November 2023, puts us in November 2024. According to use, that should be okay. Card is an influential matter. Like, if you want to interpret it, say, oh, that's it, it's a card, and that's going to be where we're on the plate. That's in May, and so I think that you need to attribute it the weight that it's merited, which is it's a May. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think you would automatically have a situation in which we have an officer we okayed, but now he can't carry a gun. I think that there would be an analysis in that situation, and I'm pretty sure it would come out to the fact that what the record yielded is that his last use, it was a whole year, we should be fine. So, just as a clarifying point.
I think the question with the card is, the card indicates intent to still use, just make it legal. And so, it's kind of, I'm a little concerned that you get pulled in, you have to resign your position, and in order to somehow get on the good side of the law, you go get a medical marijuana card. So that tells me the intent here was to continue using. Now, whether he did or didn't, I mean, we have no reason to believe he necessarily did, other than the intent was to continue using it. Otherwise, if he was going to say, no, you don't need one. You answer for the use you've currently been investigated for and admitted to, but to follow it up with a obtaining of a marijuana card, to me, almost lends the post position that, yeah, possessing the card is considered kind of a belief that they are using. Otherwise, why get one? And so they were just my thoughts on this. And that is, I mean, I want you to get back in the business. I really do think you need to. I think I have every reason to believe Chief Wallentine at his core, and I do. And I believe everything you've said, but I don't know that I can get my head around circumventing the federal suggestion.
Thank you, Sheriff. Janet Williams.
Yes, excuse me. These are difficult, you know, situations, all the ones that we do here. But for the order of the day, I'd like to go ahead and just make a motion to allow the suspension until the time that he resigned, which was 11/27/23. I'd like to make that a motion.
Okay, so your motion is for a suspension
from the date of resignation.
For what?
The 1 year.
1 year. So good. The motion that we have before us is for issuing a suspension of 1 year to begin on 11/27/23. Is that correct? Do we have a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Here we have a motion and a second from Chief Swanson. Motion again is for a one-year suspension up to the date of separation, which was 11/27 of, or beginning 11/27 of 2023. Is there discussion on the motion?
I guess it's vague in my mind still. Is it post council's position through advice of their legal advisor that that 1 year period from relinquishment of the medical marijuana card limits an individual's ability to have a gun under federal law?
Yes, I believe so.
So we would be circumventing that legal position.
And maybe one way of informing that is, could as an individual citizen, could Mr. Berta go and purchase a gun today? And I think the answer to that would be no, right? Because of the federal restriction based on the marijuana card.
Inference and a lot of may thrown around.
Yeah. So it's definitely confusing.
The statute is that you cannot possess a firearm if you're an unlawful user or addicted to any controlled substance. The Code of Federal Regulations that's interpreting that based on that has said if you've got multiple convictions within 5 years or your last within 1 year of your last conviction. The use of a medical marijuana card, like Sheriff Wimmer was asking, if you have it, is presumed you use it. Because why else would you have it? Because you have to go out to a doctor, say, provide the documentation, I have these illnesses, I need treatment that's not being met by prescriptions. And then you get prescribed to try the medical marijuana card. So despite everything, he's still gone out and said, I want to use that. So it's presumed, as Sheriff Wimmer pointed out, if you're gonna get the card, you're doing it for a medical purpose. It's not fun, it's not you might use it, you need this card, because nothing else is working. So that's why use is presumed when you have the card.
Is this post bound by presume or by facts and evidence?
So his certification requires him to be lawful to possess under state federal law. Strictly speaking, under federal law, once you're a user, always a user. They backed that off with the CFR and interpretations of it to say, if you haven't had access to it or convictions, if it's one and done, it's a, if it's multiple, then the court can start saying it's longer. So if you've got a 10-year use of drugs, whether it's marijuana or anything else, you're considered an unlawful user for a longer period of time versus, you know, one instance.
So I have something for Commissioner, one of you guys up here. If somebody comes into the academy and wants to be a police officer, and they come in and says, I want to apply, here's my application. By the way, I have a medical marijuana card. What's the waiting period?
We would advise them to relinquish that as soon as possible, and then it would be a year after that.
So a year after that. From the relinquished date, regardless of the use. That's what I kind of figured.
I think post concerns, my concern as the director of these, and I
was hoping that council could find a way around this. I just don't see if an officer can't go buy a gun, how we can issue him one. I'm hoping for a way around it. I was hoping for a great argument. That's what I feel like post needs.
We've had a great argument. I just think that sounds like we're stuck.
That's how I feel. I hope it's people with my otherwise.
You would have been better off not to give him that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And per his own statements, he said he was taking advice to get the medical marijuana card in the hopes it would help his previous situation. And that was erroneous. But it doesn't change the fact, Martin, you got it. And as a former federal agent, I know those federal laws just bite you in the butt sometimes.
So we have a motion before us for a one-year suspension, which would technically be served if we issued that today. Any further discussion on that motion?
Even if we do support that, he still would not be able to function under post rules as an officer for another year.
That's the issue.
Even if we give him just the year suspension, he still wouldn't be able to operate as an officer. Is that the way I understand it?
Yeah.
He's still able to carry
according to federal law. The issue is once that suspension was up, his certification would be intact. So that's the dilemma.
Can we counter motion?
On the sworn officer spot.
Yes, we have a substitute motion. Molly Sween.
I counter motion that we accept post recommendation of suspension from the date that the card was relinquished.
And do we have a second for that motion?
Sorry, what was that motion again?
The motion from
Leah,
from Molly, right, was that we adopt post recommendation and issue a suspension which would be effective until 11/26/25. Due to the medical marijuana card, and we have a second from Sheriff Wimmer. Any discussion about that motion?
So I have one more question just for this body. How much education are officers getting for this issue? Because I know that there is a lot of confusion when it comes to medical marijuana specifically, because even, you know, in municipalities and counties, we dealt with it as far as other government employees, which they can get medical marijuana licenses to be and still function in their capacity. Law enforcement is different because of the firearms component. But I think that becomes very confusing when everyone else, including all of their colleagues, is able to get a medical marijuana card and it's allowed within their overall organizations, but not within their specific department. And so I think given this issue and others, that we as a body really have a responsibility to clarify with our law enforcement throughout the state of this specific issue, because if people think, oh, well, I'm doing it legally, if there's not understanding of this specific issue that you have to wait a year, which is nuanced and debatable clearly, I think we need to be very clear with our officers what the expectation and the consequences are of that decision.
I think we're pretty clear on that, because this is one of the things that's been going on for quite a while, is that I have it in my facility is. So I have corrections officers, I've got civil, I've got patrol, you know, I've got animal control, I've got animal control assistants, I've got all these positions. Well, technically, a corrections officer isn't required to carry a firearm, so this law may not apply. However, if they do a transport or any type of inmate security, you go over to the courts to cover, they are required to carry a firearm. So now you're making specialty job things. So we tell them constantly all the time that if you get caught, this is the thing, because it's a federal law. You can't carry a firearm, and I can't have you work without carrying a firearm.
Well, I just don't know that all departments are approaching it in that way, because I know other law enforcement, just deputies and officers that are confused just per anecdotal, but I don't know that it's as clear as far as this nuance is to all officers throughout the state.
And I think you pointed out something, Barry. I think regardless, we'll be putting out some clarifications to apply. Just that we can over-communicate it.
And we have in the past, and maybe it's time for a refresh, but we have sent out a memo to Chiefs and Sheriffs in the past on this exact issue.
So we have
Janetta Williams. I just had another comment, because I can't support the recommendation, but I know that the legislators are looking at rephrasing or redoing that medical marijuana issue. And so, because it is so confusing,
I agree.
So I think at this time, like I said, I can't support the recommendation, but I would support the one-year suspension.
So we are considering the substitute motion before us now. Is there any further discussion about the substitute motion, which is adopting post-recommendation and issuing a suspension effective until November 26th of 2025. Okay, I'll call for a vote. All in favor of the substitute motion, say aye.
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 All opposed?
Nay.
Okay, I think that motion carries. We have an opposition from Chief Swanson and from Janetta Williams. Thank you. Can I interrupt for just a moment before we go on?
Yeah, no problem.
So we are a little less than halfway through our list of cases. Post has provided a lunch for us. If the council would like to take a recess for a quick lunch. I would entertain a motion to do so, or we can persevere and carry on.
I will make that motion.
That will second.
Okay. Would you, who made the motion? Can we do your motion after the next case? Rich has pointed out that the next case has a similar issue that we may want to consider while it's fresh on our minds. So we'll move to the next case and then take a recess following the Brown case.
Sheriff Sparks, can I just ask that we also do the Reese Cooper case? His attorney, Nathan Evershed, is here, and he cannot be here in the afternoon. That also needs to be a closed meeting. No. Oh, he said no? Okay. You okay with it? Okay. Sorry.
Right.
Okay, thank you. The next disciplinary case is Condre Brown. There is no agency involved. There are no years of service. The offense is use of marijuana. There are no mitigators, there are no aggravators. This is a Category C offense. The guideline baseline is 1 year. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. Post is recommending 1 year from the date of SFO certification, which is November 2nd of 2023. There is no agency action relevant, no date of separation, and this is a waiver. Condre Brown submitted an application for basic law enforcement training in 2023. In the application, he disclosed he used marijuana in 2017. After receiving his SFO certification, Brown started applying to agencies for employment. In those employment applications, he disclosed he also used marijuana in 2022. Are there any questions?
I have a question. So the willfully falsifying is now Category D according to what we just approved. Is this a Category C because of the marijuana use?
Let me just explain the change. We resolved this case for use of marijuana. This was set for a hearing after I spoke with the witnesses to get ready for the hearing. I did not believe we could show that he was willfully falsifying information to obtain a certification. So I spoke with Director Reese about my evaluation of the evidence after talking to the witnesses. I had spoken to his counsel, and we agreed that it was clear he had used marijuana in 2022 that we had not known about before, and that was why we came up with the recommendation. He obviously wasn't certified in 2022, and so that's why we have done it from the date of his SFO certification, which would be November 2nd of 2023. So then obviously that suspension would have run by now if you accept post recommendation.
Andreessen Brown or counsel, would you like to address?
Yes, thank you, counsel. For the record, my name is Ashley Gregson. I'm an attorney who works with Blake Hamilton, who is Mr. Brown's attorney and unfortunately couldn't be here today, but I'm happy to speak on behalf of Mr. Brown. And just to add a few more details to what Ms. Cravens just covered for the council. This case arises out of the discrepancies that were involved in Mr. Brown's applications about his last date of marijuana use. Mr. Brown takes responsibility for his past use. He's tried to his best ability to be transparent about that use. And unfortunately, there were just some errors that happened. We accept the recommendation of post. We think that it falls within the disciplinary guidelines to have a 1 year suspension, and the recommendation to have his suspension begin on November 2nd, 2023, which is when he received his SFO certification. And it really means a lot to Mr. Brown to be able to continue to pursue his law enforcement career. It's something that he is that's very important to him, and he intends to do that. This recommendation would give him a chance to do that, and it's he's very grateful for that, and that's why we agree with Post's recommendation. Director Cotter has also expressed support to him and encouraged him to pursue his goals in law enforcement. I thank you for your consideration this morning, especially right before your lunch break. I appreciate that. And we just ask you to accept Post's recommendation, and I'll let Mr. Brown make a statement as well.
Hi, my name is Condrius Brown. I would like to thank you and show my appreciation for being here today. It has been a goal of mine to become a law enforcement officer for many years. Unfortunately, I made a mistake a few years ago, which brought me up to this case, and I regret that I did that. I am grateful for the opportunity and recommendation will give me and still pursue my goal of becoming a law enforcement officer. I am grateful for Director Carter's support and allowing me to hopefully attend the academy. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Brown or his attorney?
That's a good question.
So one question that comes to mind for me, on the notice of agency action, it does say that Mr. Brown is a certifiable officer. Have you completed the academy training?
Yes, sir. I completed the SFO, and I was almost done with law enforcement part.
Okay, so, okay.
SFO, sir.
So you are SFO.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for Mr. Brown? We'd entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept post recommendation to be imposed from the date that 11/2/23.
I'll second.
So we have a motion from Jared Garcia and a second from Janetta Williams for accepting post recommendation and a suspension of 1 year, which would, suspension of 1 year, which would commence on 11/2/23. Is that correct?
Effective on that date, yes.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Thank you. And then, Melina, if we could come back to your motion, would you be willing to revise your motion to take the Cooper case before the Connolly case and then recess for lunch?
So moved.
We have a second. Sheriff Wimmer is a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you. Okay. This case is Reese Cooper. He was with UPD. He has 4 years of service. The offense is use or possession of a controlled substance, a Class A misdemeanor. There are no mitigating circumstances. The aggravating circumstance is there were two instances involved. This is a Category B offense. It's a three-year baseline. The guideline range is 1.5 years to revocation. Post is recommending 1.5 years. He was suspended for 40 hours by his agency, and this was a waiver. The facts of this case are the following. Reese Cooper, a certified officer with UPD, admitted to using a Schedule II prescription drug, which was not prescribed to him. On December 23rd of 2023, Mr. Cooper was told by his supervisor to complete a random drug screening. Prior to the test, Cooper admitted he had taken his wife's Adderall on December 20th of 2023 and another one the week prior. Cooper provided Post with a recent letter from his counselor stating he had been prescribed Adderall based upon his diagnosis as part of the resolution in this case. And just to clarify, the letter from his counselor is recent to the resolution of this case, not Post's investigation.
Nathan Evershed, attorney for Mr. Reese Cooper, and I appreciate the indulgence to allow us to do this before lunch. It's a privilege to be back before this council. Before you today is Mr. Reese Cooper. He's 42 years old, 5 years in law enforcement, has been married 10 years. There's a background that we want to share, and this goes back to when he was a kid. He was diagnosed with ADHD. He was diagnosed, prescribed that as Adderall, and he began taking that when he was 18 years old. He took that for the next 18 years of his life, and then he began just to not take that and decided not to when he was about 36, just about 6 years ago. The basic facts are what you've heard. December 23rd, 2023, he was asked to go in for a drug test where he volunteered and said, I might test positive for Adderall. based off of the mitigating circumstances in this case, we're asking for, and we appreciate the downward deviation from post, but we're asking for an even further downward deviation based off of what I'm going to tell you in terms of the mitigating circumstances. We'd be asking for a letter of caution. He self-reported. The only evidence that we have that he took Adderall was his own words. He did not have a prescription for it, though. It was in his own home. It was in his wife's cabinet. It was his wife's Adderall. And she was aware that, in fact, he was taking it for his own purposes. He now has a prescription, as has been told you. He's properly taking it. It is a controlled substance, but it is, at the end of the day, something that's well-known and prescribed. A drug test was performed. No controlled substances were actually found in his system. He has received a significant suspension from his own department. I know letters of support have been offered by two different chiefs, which I think are very, very illuminate where he is. And we understand where POST is coming from. We understand that there are guidelines, and we can't deviate, and we can't ask POST to do anything more than they've done. We appreciate the downward deviation. But we're asking, based off of his self-report, nothing being in his system, these being his wife's pills, the pills are for Adderall, and he now has a valid prescription. One of those is just mitigating. In this case, there's five of them. And maybe the most mitigating is that we talked about this earlier today, or you all talked about this. Honesty is really needed in law enforcement officers. This is what you have here today. He self-reported this. He owned this, and the only reason he's here is because he has just that kind of character that he reported this. So for those reasons, we'd be asking for a downward deviation based off of all those facts and circumstances for a letter of caution and allow him to go forward. I know he has some words he wants to say.
I regret that I am here today in front of you, but appreciate having the opportunity to speak and hoping that you can see that I've learned a lot from this. I have grown and am deserving of a second chance to put this behind me and keep growing in my career as a police officer. I want to express that this was an isolated incident. I was in the midst of working with my doctor to figure out my medication, but I still take full responsibility and wish it had not happened this way at all. I'm a very honest person, prides myself on my character and integrity, which is why I self-reported and have been working hard to do all I need to do to be able to put this behind me. I have a lot of regret that this happened, that I've put my family through this and my department through this last year while waiting for closure on things. I'm very thankful for the support I've had from my family, my police, my department, who have written several letters of support, encouraged me through this, believed in me, and are all invested as much as I am to being able to continue my career as a police officer. Since this happened a year ago, I have remained on duty with a clean record at work and even moved to a specialty position with the Canyons that has been a dream of mine for as long as I can remember. I have had countless clean drug tests, continue to see a therapist and my doctor regularly, and most importantly, continue to be a husband and father to my two young children. And we currently have one on the way as well. I'm the main provider for my family, financially, with insurance. I will be devastated if this is causing me to lose my career I love, but also be able to take care of my family. I can assure you, this will never happen again.
Are there any questions for Mr. Cooper, his attorney? Yes, ma'am.
So the officer was prescribed Adderall when in his youth, right? Did you mention, Mr. Attorney, that he decided to stop taking Adderall in his 30s? My question, if I can ask, would be why did the patient decide to stop?
I'm happy to.
Would you like me to answer what I know, or? And this is common with people. He wanted to explore what life would be like without Adderall. He wasn't an 18-year-old kid anymore. He wasn't a kid. And he thought he could do it. And obviously, he couldn't.
Other questions? We do have two letters from the Unified Police Department. Give you just a minute to review those letters if you haven't already. Okay, we'll bring it back to the council for further discussion or a motion. Ron.
I recommend that the council proceed with a letter of caution. Based on the facts, at age 18, he was prescribed Adderall for ADHD. That condition does not go away. He decided in his 30s to try doing it on his own, and that was a failure. I recognize it is a mistake to take someone else's prescription drug medication, not prescribed to him. At the same time, I think we have mercy here in the sense that now that he's back on Adderall, is functioning as a very successful officer, and we go with a letter of caution based on these facts.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion that I make.
Motion from Ron Hansen.
So you'll have to. Second, we'll also have to speak to that because you are going not only outside the guideline, you're significantly deviating to justify the. So it's not arbitrary and capricious.
I'm willing to do that. I second that because he also was punished. His agency took immediate action on him and suspended him for a lengthy time, so it's not like they overlooked it.
You're going from a Class A misdemeanor to 40 hours off work, so you've got to beat that up some more.
I also remember that the last time we dealt with this, which I think was the last meeting we had, where we had the same issue when we downward deviated, and I believe it was a retired DPS worker that was trying to get back into law enforcement and had taken his wife Adderall.
I'd like to follow up on Maylee's comment or question and understand the inverse as far as why you started taking it again when you did, while you were still going through that process, why you made the decision to take your wife's Adderall when you did.
I couldn't get in to see the doctor for a month. They were booked out.
And what was going on that made you feel after those, 6 years that you didn't have it, that you couldn't wait another month?
I could have. I made a mistake. But I was having symptoms that I've had my entire life, and, you know, my wife was just trying to help me. So I made a mistake. It's not like I was going to die or anything. I shouldn't have taken it. I get it.
Well, no, I think I'm trying to understand as far as was it impeding your ability to act in your duties? Manifesting for just, you trying to understand what that was like.
Struggling multitasking and being able to focus. So
further questions or discussion? So we have a motion to reject Post's recommendation of 1.5 years and to move outside the guidelines for a Category B violation and issue a letter of caution. Is there any further discussion on that motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We have two opposed, Sheriff Curtis and Molly Sween. All three opposed, and John Crowley. Leave the motion carries. Based on our previous motion, we will take a recess for 30 minutes.